Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
From issues plaguing the veteran community, this is where we discuss topics such as the VA, social stigmas, issues from our veteran community around the world and here at home. Join the hosts from DV Radio shows, outside guests, and much more. Ask your questions during the show and we'll answer them. This is Round Table Discussions.
That's right. This is our new show, Round Table Discussions. Welcome to DV Radio's newest show, where we take topics from other shows in the news and that matter to you and go into detail as much as possible. I am Boner Wood from Barracks Talk and DV Radio. This is our first episode of Roundtable Discussions, and we are recording video as well as audio so that you will be able to see the video on YouTube within a few weeks after this live airing. So please bear with us tonight as we may run into some connective issues and with the internet and so on and so forth. So without further ado, tonight's Roundtable Discussions features the service dog show with PTS dog Joaquin Watai, and we're going to be discussing the access issues with service dogs. Joining us tonight, as already mentioned, is PTS dog and Navy vet Joaquin Watai. How you doing, brother?
Doing well. Good evening, and thank you for putting this all together.
Of course, as well as Marine and New York City Detective Devil Dog. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. Everything's good in NYC.
Most definitely. Marine and veteran advocate, the Spaniard. How about you, man? How you doing over there?
Oh, just living the dream. Just very thankful for being invited to the show.
Hey, welcome. And Nick, a disabled Army vet and currently trains service dogs with veterans as well as mentors at the Veterans Court in his hometown of Pennsylvania. How you doing tonight, Nick?
Doing great. Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, thank you all for being here tonight. I'm glad you all could make it. So yes, we are, like I said, talking about access issues with service dogs, and you're here for one reason or another. So let's go right into it. Joaquin, is there anything you want to mention about why you wanted to bring this discussion to everybody that's listening tonight and why you brought these individuals onto the show?
Well, primarily, we have four different individuals, including myself, from different backgrounds, different coasts, although we all seem to have migrated over to the right coast or close to it in Spaniard's case. But we're all in different walks of life and doing different things. And we all have seen access issues, seen challenges and things like that in different locations and have different experience. My goal tonight is that we will come to a consensus of how to handle it when someone says, you can't bring that dog in here. So with all of our combined experience from both sides of asking the question, is that a service dog? I'm hoping that we'll be able to shed some light on just what kind of challenges people do face and the best ways to deal with those challenges when they happen.
Right. And I know from listening to your show, the Service Dog Show, as well as just the news and what we have to deal with on the main DB page and other things, that there's a stigma with not just service dogs, but breeds and stuff like that. And then the laws, and it's just a plethora of something 24/7. And it's honestly, in my opinion, gotten completely ridiculous with the way some of these not just people, but establishments and the country itself has come to hold it and deal with things, as well as the media, the way they portray things, because, you know, they want to spin it. And as the saying goes, if it bleeds, it leads. And that's the way they roll. So, I mean,
well, and honestly, I think the number one, the biggest issue that disabled people who use service dogs face is the way that they end up being portrayed in the news when somebody who's not disabled or whose dog is not trained gets themselves in the news and claims it's a service dog, and like you said, if it bleeds, it leads. And They blow it out of proportion. They misquote the law. The facts are never what actually happened and what the media says are almost always two different things. And it really has gotten to the point where anybody walking into any establishment with a service dog is immediately assumed to be fake. And that's horrible. It's horrible to walk into the grocery store with Skeeter by my side and know that 9 out of 10 people in that store are going to think I'm just bringing my dog into the store.
Exactly.
But that's the atmosphere that the media has created.
Right. And that's not just the media, but it's a social stigma as well. If you're not, got a cane or in a wheelchair, you're not disabled. But you're completely right. There is a stigma with that. And then on top of that, the back end where people are like, what can a dog do for you? I can't tell you how many times I get that. It's like, a dog can't do nothing. A dog can't do this. A dog can't do that. Well, I'll tell you right now, my dog saved my life more times than I can count. And I know that that's the same case for yourself, Joaquin, and probably the other three men that are with us tonight. But I know that we need to get down to this and start the roundtable discussion questions. We do have quite a few things that we need to hit on. So Devil Dog, the first question is for everybody, as with every question that we have here. But Devil Dog, the first question, and you're going to be the first one to answer, sorry. You're each from a different background and live in different areas of the country. So in your opinion, what is the biggest challenge each of you have had to face while entering a business or location with your service dog?
The challenges that I face personally is going into one of these big box stores, chain stores, and being stopped immediately by either the security or the staff there and questioning your disability. And that's the big problem that I face with my dog is immediately, what's your disability that you need this dog? What's wrong with you? And then having to explain that is kind of demeaning and frustrating. And that's when my anxiety goes up. And immediately my dog just senses it and she starts pulling, like, let's get out of here, let's get out of here. So that's the challenge I face, is getting past that first security or staff member and having to explain why, you have a service dog.
Right. Now, just to go in on that a little bit, how has it like impeded on your life? Like, for example, going to a grocery store or to the mall with family or whatever, has it like stopped you and you were like, screw this, I got to leave or what have you?
Absolutely. It just basically stopped me from doing it. The fear of getting anxiety of just having to have those questions asked and being approached by these strangers and wanting me to explain my disability. I just said, screw that. I do all my shopping online. It's a shame, but you know what? It's my safe zone, and it just sucks. So I stay home in the comfort of my home, and I don't have to deal with those ridiculous and embarrassing questions.
Now, is it a problem with you not looking like you're disabled, or is it the breed, or has it been both at times? Because I know breeds are one of the big things when it comes to service dogs. For example, the bull breed, pit bulls and of the such. Is that one thing that you faced as well, or is it just the personal image of not looking disabled?
It would say both. I mean, my service dog, she's a German Shepherd Husky mix, and she looks intimidating, but she's a sweetheart. And of course, looking at me, look at this guy, he's in decent shape. He's not disabled, so it's a little of both.
Right. Well, Spaniard, same question.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but very similar to Devil Dog. My encounter was 5 years ago when I first started training with Katanum. I didn't realize how, I'm just going to say it, people are just horrible. They're horrible at times, because I developed a sense of the motto of circumstances will dictate tactics. The very first time I went into a store, I was followed. And the way I operate, I'm in constant yellow. And for those folks out there that don't know what that means, it's just being in caution. You know, there's being in yellow means you're kind of looking around all the time. And then there's being in red where you're in high alert. I was always in between yellow and red, you know, and that very first time where not only one person stopped me, but three people stopped me. And we were at a furniture store. I mean, it was big. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary. I'm very quiet. And then that's the one thing that I've learned, that when I take Katana out with me, I try to stay invisible, which is very hard because you guys know as soon as that dog is near your side, eyeballs are on you. So this first time when I actually did it, my wife kind of saw the agitation. Katana kind of, again, nudged me and was kind of pushing me towards the door. And that was my final decision right there. It wasn't the final. A couple more instances had occurred that same year. And I came to the conclusion that it's not worth it. My anger, I mean, I have a very short fuse. I've learned several techniques to keep my anger in check. And that was just one circumstance where I said I had to weigh out the outcomes. Am I going to take Katana out there for my good, or is it going to turn into a battle? Is it going to turn into a challenge where I'm going to have to get in somebody's face and educate them? I just came to the point where it's like, you know what? I'm getting tired of educating. If these people don't understand the concept, or if they have failed to understand or do the research when they do see a dog, then that's their ignorance. I've kind of come to the decision where I cannot help those who don't want to help themselves. So I'm very picky of where I go now. It's sad to say it, but I sometimes have to I have to think a little bit more of whether or not I want to take Katana out with me, if it's worth the aggravation of being asked.
Right. Now, you said that Katana will nudge you and stuff like that, and I didn't ask Devil Dog this, but I'll ask you, does your dog seem to have any anxiety when you get to a point where your fuse is about to burst and stuff like that? Does she get agitated after a certain point and you have to say, yeah, we need to go, I'm about to blow my fuse, she's about to lose it?
Oh, yeah. It she'll look at me. She'll constantly keep looking. It's like checking in with Dad. You know, she's looking up, and you can see when I see the whites of her eyes, that's when I know that she's kind of looking down, but also looking up at me for approval to say, yeah, it's time to go. And that's my cue.
Right. And you mentioned your wife. Now, does it impact your family a great deal when you're unable to go into, like you said, the furniture store or something like that? Or do they understand it and deal with it and say, yeah, let's just get the hell out of here?
No, they're very good. My family are very locked on when it comes to that. You know, we actually kind of role play before we go out. You know, the what ifs. If someone approaches, this is what we're going to do. And we also have if worst case scenario happens, I'll meet you guys back in the car. And they're cool with it. You know, that's like our own secret little backup plan.
Right. So in essence, you have trained, quote unquote, your family to how to deal with things with your dog and with yourself and with the public outcry, basically.
Yeah. Oh. You nailed it. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Joaquin, yourself, your different background, obviously you're in North Carolina. I know we have a lot of things to deal with here in North Carolina, but you've been to a few different states and lived in a few different places across the country. How has that affected you in those different states? And does it vary from the places you've been and where you're currently at? Yeah, you're still muted.
There we go. Sorry. For some reason, the space bar wasn't wanting to cooperate. I've had a lot of experiences. I traveled across the country. I went from Michigan to Oregon to back to Michigan, back to Oregon, out to North Carolina, down through Texas to California, and back up to Oregon, and then back all the way out to North Carolina. When I was doing the trips to make interviews for the book. So I have hit probably 3/4 of the states in the continental United States with Skeeter by my side. And I've seen everything from just acceptance, there's a guy with a service dog, to being denied participation being denied a room at a hotel because my service dog weighed more than 20 pounds, which was just absolutely ludicrous. But honestly, the better educated you are as a handler, the better able you are to deal with things when people challenge you, and especially when they challenge you incorrectly. And I wanted to touch on something that Devil Dog had said, that people ask him why he needs a service dog. That question's actually illegal. They can say, are you disabled? But they can't say, what's your disability? The questions that are legal to ask are, is that a service dog required because of a disability? And what tasks is it trained to perform? That's all anybody can legally, from a business, can legally ask you. And if anybody from a business is asking you anything else, they're breaking federal law. Nine times out of 10, if you educate them, you know, that's actually not legal for you to ask me. Have you read the ADA? And I pull it up on my phone. I have the link like permanently embedded. When the screen turns off, you can still read the ADA questions and answers. Nice. You know, but that's part, you know, but that's the thing, is that's part of who I am and the mission that I've taken on as I've begun my recovery journey with PTSD, is that I want to educate people. The service dog is what saved my life. The drugs didn't help me. The counseling, the repeated over and over counseling sessions, and that didn't save my life. What saved my life was this big scurry dog laying here on the floor next to me. So I decided that it was part of my mission that I was going to share this life-saving tool with my brothers and sisters. And so and again, you kind of touched on this with the Spaniard. My mindset is, 90% of the time, my mindset is, I'm going to have to answer questions. So I can do so politely and be pleasant and educate. And I make up my mind that day that I'm going to do that. Now, there are days that I can't. You know, we have good days and we have bad days. There are days when I'm not in the mindset to deal with the stupid. And on those days, my 1,000-yard stare and my best leading petty officer voice are very good tools to use. And I have gone full LPO on a knucklehead in the Walmart before and gotten them to back off. And I hate having to do that, because then it's that crazy military guy with his dog in the story, and it's that crazy veteran. But, you know, you, like you said, Devil Dog, well, you both said it. You get pushed to a certain point and you're like, no more. I can't do this anymore. I'm done. I can't. There are days, and there are days when Skeeter and I go in and I'm got blinders on and he's glued to my hip. He's right there like, dad's not handling this. And we go straight for what we're looking for and come straight out and ignore everything.
Yeah.
And there are those days where it's just, you know, I get that power glower on and just, and I'm mission, you know? But I've done my best to try to be as approachable as possible because of what I do and who I am. Again, the most powerful tool I've found is education, is having the knowledge. I will tell you a quick story. The worst denial of access I ever had. I had reserved a room at a lodge in Oregon on the river, and it was supposedly pet friendly, but I let them know I had my service dog, and the owner said, "Well, okay, but you can't have your service dog on the bed." And I just, I had to pick my jaw up off the floor, and I'm on the phone and I'm saying, are you telling me that you can tell me how to use my medical equipment? You can't tell me how to use my medical equipment. If part of his task is to wake me up from nightmares, he has to get on the bed to do that. And that is one of his tasks. You can't tell me that I can't use my service dog the way I need to use my service dog. And he said, well, that's what I'm telling you. You can't have the dog on the bed. I said, okay, cancel my reservation, and you'll be hearing from the Oregon Department of Civil Rights or whatever, because that's illegal. And he said, well, you know what? I'll have my lawyer call you. And I said, please do. And about 3 hours later, he called me back and said, you're right. I can't tell you that you can't have your service dog on the bed. I said, no, I'm right. And I said, however, I don't want to stay at your establishment. Cancel my reservation. And by the way, I'm still reporting you. And in Oregon, it's they don't have a Department of Disability. It is called the Department of Customer Relations, I guess, is who handles ADA style complaints. They did a full investigation and issued a censure letter to him, so explaining the ADA, explaining the law. There were no fines or anything, and I didn't want any fines. I just, what about, you know, this is a veteran heavy area that I was in. A lot of veterans, you know, could be going there. My concern is what happens to the next guy who doesn't take the time to try to educate, who isn't patient, who doesn't know to make the phone calls. What happens to the next guy who's got PTSD and is told you can't use your service dog and he blows his top, you know, again, and then you get that crazy veteran with the dog thing, you know, really what my concern was not that I get payback, but was that it didn't happen to another veteran.
Right. And you mentioned, you know, he can't tell you what to do with your medical equipment. And I like that you said that because that's what it is. And it's an extension of you. And you've said it plenty of times, not just on your show, but on your Facebook page, as well as in your book. It would be just like someone telling me I can't have my power chair or wheelchair in their establishment. I mean, I can't walk. It'd be physically impossible for me to get around without it. So I would need that. And same for you. I mean, you can't quote unquote function without your service dog. So yeah, I don't want to say it's miscommunication, but people aren't trained to understand these things. And there is some training that they should take, I believe. I mean, just being aware of the ADA, first and foremost, and it doesn't trickle down. But Nick, same question to you. What's the biggest challenge you faced when entering a business or location with your service dog and all that good stuff?
To be honest, in the great state of Pennsylvania, I'm a little different than these guys. Me and Grace seldomly ever get denied anywhere. Actually, our biggest problem is over access. Everyone with Fluffy the Wonder Poodle wants to go to Walmart. So every time we're out and about and I see another team, I'm scared. I'm worried about which dog is going to go after my dog. So my dog's already been attacked in Target. And it took me about 2 months to get her to even walk back into that store. I have ran into my biggest denial of access I've ran into is, like I said in the introduction, is I do work with different counties with Veterans Court. I've had a few counties that would deny my service dog or would in question if it was a service dog in training or do I have a trainer with me with my animal.
Well, so the over access, you mentioned, you know, Fluffy the Wonder Poodle and stuff like that. How does that impact people with actual service dogs? Does it hinder them? Does it cause problems at the end of the day?
It causes big problems. Because for those that ain't familiar, when your service dog is attacked, it only takes one attack and then your service dog can shut down. I just lost 3 years. I've lost my access. I've lost my ability to go out in public because if I didn't have Grace to nudge me when I get to the door, or if I didn't have her when you're checking out to go into a cover to make sure she's protecting me, I would have meltdowns almost every time I go out. You know, if I don't have my service human with me, of course.
Right, right. So everybody has had a different experience across the country. Joaquin's had one in every state imaginable, obviously. Nick's had, you know, over access, which you think you'd never hear. That, honestly, that boggles the mind at times. Let's go back to the Zebel dog. Talking about your access challenges when you have them or have had them, how did you handle them? And within that, how would you, you know, handle it differently the next time it happens or if it happens tomorrow, for example?
Well, I'll speak about how did I handle it at that time. I got a short fuse and I was losing my temper. My anxiety just kicked in. I wanted to just curse this guy out. Immediately, Shala saw it. She noticed it. She started lunging for the exit. And I fought it and I just got into a shouting match with the guy and she just gave me another tug, and that's when I snapped out of it and said, okay, it's time to go. So basically Shala prevented me from getting in trouble because I was really, really losing it. And once I saw though, she started pulling me and looking at me, I already knew, okay, it's time to go. So I left the store. So what I would do differently now is I walk around with the ADA cards and present it at the time that I'm challenged or that I'm stopped. And, you know, kind of in a friendly way, an approachable way, explain, you know, why they have to grant me access to their establishment. And the main thing is to keep calm. When I'm calm, the dog is calm. When my anxiety kicks in, it trickles straight to her. She knows it. She senses it. And that's what I would do differently.
Now, this isn't in our questions, but have you ever had an establishment that didn't have it posted that you couldn't have an animal there at all? And you got in there and they said, we don't allow animals in there. Have you ever had that happen to you?
Yes, absolutely. I have that happen. It was actually a restaurant, actually. It was up in Washington, D.C. Same issue. You know, they said, nope, you can't come in. It was posted. No dogs allowed. Again, same situation. I explained, this is my service dog. In this case, the manager was really, really nice. She came out. She says, of course. And she gave me a nice table close to the exit. And that was it.
That's very respectful and respectable on her part, yeah, as well. And that restaurant. Spaniard, same thing with you. You know, how did you deal with any access challenge, and what would you do differently?
You see, I consider myself a strange breed. One thing I learned a long time ago, that one thing you don't want to do, or one person you don't want to mess with, is an educated Marine. And I remember when maybe the second year after I got Katana, we went on I think it was in Indianapolis. We drove down to Indianapolis for a seminar. It was law enforcement related or something. And I brought her with. It wasn't a big deal. It was some kind of convention. And I've gone to conventions before with her. It wasn't a huge deal. We stopped at a restaurant. And again, there was a sign that said no animals. And that's all it said. No weapons and no animals. Well, I said, well, there's two of my categories out right there. So I'm going in. I'm hungry. It looked like a nice place. It was before the lunch rush. I get in there and right away, you know, they must have saw me getting out of the car. And they must have practiced, all right? So I walk in there, and again, it was a rehearsed speech. Sorry, sir, you know, animals are not related or are not allowed in. So again, I just used hand signals. I told Katana to sit, then to stay, to go in the down position, and then stay. All hand signals. Didn't say a word, and I just slowly walked over. It was almost slow motion. It was beautiful. It would have been a great movie scene. So I walk up really slowly up to the counter. And I just looked at Katana over my right shoulder, over my left shoulder, just to let her know that I was okay. And I said, this animal right here is going to be the difference between me having a good day and you having a real messed up year. And I said, are you willing to start this fight today? Because I really don't have the energy, and I guarantee you I will win. That was a lot of confidence talking, almost arrogance. But at this point in the day, I was just, you know, I was just tired. And, I made my point. I proved my point. And that's kind of like what Nick said earlier about the over access is I train with my dog every day. I mean, we're constantly training. So my dog is more than just my dog. She's my partner, you know, and she has my six and I have hers. So when people see that, they kind of see how disciplined she is, especially with the hand signals. I mean, that's the one thing that blows people's mind. Is that I could even look at her and she knows exactly what to do. And I think that's when people realize, let's not mess with this. Let's not go there. But really it just comes down to is the thing that's really going to change is our society. I mean, people have got to lighten up and stop thinking that they're entitled to everything. You know, just because you see a dog doesn't mean you have to, you know, talk to it like it's yours. It's, I don't know. I think it's just we need more lessons in whether it's the schools or at the workplace where you teach people, you know, and I hate to say this, pardon my French, don't be a dick. Just go about your business. Mind your own business. If I want your opinion, I will give it to you. Spaniard out.
Most definitely. I want to go back to Devil Dog really quick, because he mentioned that he has the ADA card and he shows that to people when he runs into a problem. Do you ever have someone say, I don't care, I don't give a damn about that card, that means nothing to me, or that doesn't matter, or I don't have to follow that? And how did you deal with that?
Absolutely. Home Depot. I mean, I was ready to knock this guy out. Same thing. This time it was with my new service dog. Shala, she's since passed, but now I got a new service dog. Her name is Layla. Same thing. Who cares? What is this? You know, and a lot of times the law enforcement side of me wants to come out and say, who are you to tell me I can't do this? But you know what? They will look at me in a different light the minute I will say I'm a law enforcement officer. Because to these people in society, well, you're a New York City detective and you have a service dog. Well, how can you function as a detective? They don't know. They have no idea. You know, I can put that aside. So it's happened in that particular store. So in there, you know what? You request a manager. The manager comes. Same situation. The manager is always polite and told the security staff, listen, you got to let this guy in. And, you know, it's not like Layla, she'll just stay there patiently. She looks like, is it okay? We can go in, because she's still a pup. She's 6 months. But yeah, it's happened to me.
Right. Yeah. And I can only imagine, you know, the frustration with someone that's telling you you're wrong and you've got, you know, the ADA right in front of them. You are tuned in to WDBR on DBRadio.net. This is our first roundtable discussions featuring the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog Joaquin Lanza. Tonight, we are discussing access issues with service dogs. We've got Devil Dog, the Spaniard, Joaquin Watai, and Nick, and myself, Boner Wood, talking to you guys. Joaquin, same question to you. How have you handled these access challenges in the past? I know you've had some recently. And what would you do the next time, just on your obviously extensive research in all of this? What are your words on that? You're muted. Nope, we can't hear you. If you want to fix your audio, we'll go on to Nick and then we'll come back to you, Joaquin. Nick, since Joaquin's having technical issues, if you want to go ahead and answer.
Like I said, mine's more of an over-access issue. A lot of people in my area, they just don't know the laws. They honestly don't know them. Even a lot of the organizations around here that are training the dogs aren't exactly sure the ADA. They train dogs, so no one's getting educated. The times I've ran into over-access, I'll give you a good example. I was at a government building, and this young man was bringing in this German Shepherd. It was a beautiful Shepherd. Had a muzzle on. The dang thing tried to bite three people, actually landed someone through a muzzle in the middle of this government building. The people at that didn't even know how to handle the situation. So at that time, I let them know, like, you got to take the dog out. Like, this dog is a danger. And a couple of days later, I called back and I went back to the office. And I brought in all the information I've gotten from JJ, took it in there, and I gave them the law. And I was like, look, this is what you need to be looking at. This is how you protect yourself. This is how you protect the people there. The few access issues I've had, like in the other counties, going to like work with the other vet corps counties, I've had one county absolutely deny me access with my dog until I pulled the one sheriff aside and I talked to him and explained to him not only the ADA and that government offices do fall under that, but... well, local government, not federal government. But also, I showed him the state law for Pennsylvania. And that being an ambassador for my dog and for myself and for the disabled people around here, because we don't have representation, has always overcome any access issues I've had.
Right. So, I you're over access. When you see that, and you're able to pretty much obviously go anywhere you want, but you see a Chihuahua, which we all know and have seen actual Chihuahuas be service dogs, but you know that, you know, grandma that's got her little Chihuahua in her handbag from Louis Vuitton doesn't need it. How do you handle that when you're in there? Because I know that would piss me off. Straight up, I would be pissed off. I know that it would probably show off in my dog, and she'd get agitated alongside with me. Does that ever happen to you?
I get pissed off, but in all honesty, confrontation can lead to more problems. One,
most definitely.
I'm going to flare up. I'm going to get angry. And you know what? It's probably not going to go right for me. Two, if I go and approach a team I know it's not a legit service dog team, I'm putting my dog in jeopardy because I don't know their training. That dog can go after my dog in a heartbeat, whether it's a Chihuahua, a Lab, a Pit Bull. It can be any dog. It can go after Grace. And then I could be down the back to square one.
Right. And I totally get that. And I'm glad you said that, you know, a small confrontation can just lead to more confrontation. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. Whether you're trying to be nice or not, confrontation is confrontation. And in today's world, people are going to take anything personal. I don't care who it is, what time of day it is, they're going to take it personal. Joaquin, you got your audio back up or? Yeah, no, it's not.
Got to pay your bill, man.
Is your microphone connected? if you won't, well, I don't know. I was going to say, get out and get back in, but that might screw up our.
How's that? There we go.
There you go. So, Joaquin, since we had to skip over, you can come back. Your accent challenges, and how did you handle them, and what would you do differently? Like I said, you've had extensive, quote-unquote, throughout the United States.
You know, at the very beginning, I don't know how typical this is, but I think in all the people I've talked to, this is fairly typical. When I made the decision to use a service dog to start training Skeeter, I didn't know anything about the ADA. I knew that I could have a service dog. I knew that I had the right to have a service dog, but I didn't know what that meant. So I started reading and I started studying and I started learning and I started getting told you can't bring that dog in here. And at the time I was really beginning to work with him in public. I lived in Pueblo, Colorado. I was using pet-friendly locations, like Home Depot. Most Home Depots are pet-friendly, so I'm really shocked, Devil Dog, that you were told you couldn't bring a dog into Home Depot. That's crazy. I was using the Home Depot, the Lowe's, the pet store. I'd go to the PetSmart all the time with him to start exposing him to different things. And while I was doing that, I was learning more about the ADA, learning that I had more to learn to the ADA. And I just thought to myself, man, I really wish there was something to make this easier, like a book or something that had all this information in it that I could carry with me in my back pocket if need be. Hang on just a second. Sorry, excuse me. I had a sneeze sneak up on me. I started studying. I started reading the law. I started reading stories and realized that the book that I had wanted wasn't there. So I wrote it. That's really what got me started in with the idea of writing a book about service dogs, because I was getting sick and tired of the same stupid things happening. The same stores saying over and over, well, you can't bring that dog in here. This is a service dog. He's here to assist me with my disability. By federal law, you have to let me in. I got tired of saying it over and over. So what I did to how I started doing it differently is I started writing the book. I did everything I could to learn as much as I could. I still learn every day. I read news stories. I look in depth into the subject daily, do as much as I can personally to help educate other handlers, because nobody teaches us this stuff. Guys who go to the big programs, Canines for Warriors and things like that, have come to my page and said, I had no idea. Why didn't they tell us this? Nobody teaches this stuff. So that was my answer, is I'm going to start teaching it, because the education isn't out there about the ADA. And both on both sides, handlers aren't getting taught, but neither are stores. And, and this is a question, and that I'm going to have to step away, but this is a question for both Devil Dog and Spaniard, who both have law enforcement backgrounds. And I want to kind of wrap that part of the discussion up with a question to these two. As law enforcement officers, you know that ignorance of the law is not an excuse. Businesses are responsible for understanding the laws that affect them. Tell me, when you're called to a situation where a service dog is involved and access is involved, what are the thoughts that go through your head?
Well, a lot of times when I get to those calls, it's kind of personal to me, and it is personal. But I'm sympathetic to the situation. Immediately, I talk to the owner. You know, what's the problem? Why are you denying access? Then I talk to the individual, whether he's a veteran or not. And it's just basically, is he aware of the laws and his type of dog, demeanor? For like Nick nailed it. If you have some lady with a Gucci bag and a good old Chihuahua causing a ruckus, first of all, if it's a service dog, it shouldn't be acting in that type of fashion. And I'm very sympathetic whether I got to tell them that I have to escort them out that establishment or not. But I pull both aside and speak to each individually. And if I feel that, yes, you know what, this person does have knowledge of the ADA and the dog is trained, then I don't see a problem. I'll speak to the owner and say, listen, federal law states you have to give this person access. Now, I can see your concern if the dog is barking, is going being aggressive, then by all means, I have to escort them out the store. But I take it personal only because I have a service dog.
And Spaniard?
Good answer. The only circumstance that I got involved with was at a casino. I was working with the state police, and part of my duty was, you know, regulate the operations of the casino. And there was an altercation that had occurred. And I just called in just to kind of observe, just to kind of be a backup there. And the staff, you know, security, whoever, whatever the local police were there. And I just happened to come in just to kind of add my two cents. And I said, hey, just to kind of keep this simple so that we don't have to do a lot of paperwork all the way back. I don't like to do a lot of paperwork. So that was my motivation to say, hey guys, you know, let's kind of save all the paperwork tonight and just think of it this way. If you saw a person in a wheelchair, would you give them a hard time? And they're like, well, no, of course not. And I said, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you give that person a hard time? And, you know, their response was, well, because we'd probably get sued. I'm like, there you go. I go, look at it in the same way. And people kind of had to stop and kind of, you know, it's almost like an aha moment. I'm like, it's really not rocket scientist, or it's not rocket science. If you see that this person, you can kind of tell, you know, if you see a person who's kind of struggling a little bit and you know that the dog is being very obedient and if it's always looking at the handler, you know, there's something going on there. So it's not a pet. I think, Bo, you said it before. It's a piece of your medical equipment. So that's how I kind of laid it out to everybody. And, you know, I don't know if I educated anybody, but I kind of saved a lot of people a lot of hassle. And, you know, it really came back down to serve and protect. I'm really serving in an aspect of, you know, you gotta look at the whole picture instead of just trying to always try to do the right thing or doing things right, that people forget to do the things, you know, do the right thing. So I think I chopped that up, but I think you guys get the point.
Right. I totally get what you're saying. Since we ended with Spaniard there, we'll start with Joaquin with this last question, since we've only got about 15 minutes. Are you actively pursuing any education regarding service dogs? I know that you do a lot of research anyway, but in your area, as in North Carolina or just your local area? And if so, how?
Yeah, I essentially have the mindset that yes, I know I'm going to have to educate, and I'm willing to do so. And I have the materials at hand. in order to do so. I've been working, as you know, my significant other works in asset protection in Walmart, and through her, I've been kind of spreading the information to a couple of the local Walmarts about service dogs. Walmart's one of the worst places, like Nick's been talking about, with over access. Walmart got sued back in the early 90s for a lot of money because they did deny an actual service dog. So their reaction or overreaction was to start allowing any animal in that the person with it claimed was a service dog. And we're seeing the other end of that pendulum swing now, where Walmart's starting to pare back on it because it's become a freaking zoo.
Literally.
And Walmart, yeah, it has. It's been, I mean, I've seen squirrels in Walmart. It was the person's squirrel. Don't get me started. The pendulum's swinging back the other way, and they're starting to ask, is that a service dog? I had an incident last week in Walmart. Well, it wasn't really an incident, and that's was kind of refreshing. There was a woman pushing a little something, I don't know, fluffy fur dog, yap dog, around, closed up in a little puppy stroller. And I ran into them head on twice in the store with Skeeter. And Skeeter completely ignored the little yap dog. To the woman's credit, whether it was a service dog or not, it completely ignored Skeeter. So there wasn't an incident. And that was shocking to me, because every time I've seen, the little purse dogs rolling around in a stroller or in a purse in a store, every time they see Skeeter and they go berserk, and Skeeter's literally 50 times the size of this dog, and it's just like, really, you really think you're going to take on this monster? But I don't know whether or not it was a legitimate service dog. I don't know if the woman was disabled, but it didn't matter because the dog was well behaved. The other side of that coin, though, is a couple of weeks ago, we went into Walmart. There was a woman in there with a pit bull type dog who immediately charged Skeeter so aggressively that Skeeter actually barked. One bark. I got him turned away, got the grocery cart in between that dog and Skeeter, and the woman's response was, "Oh, he must not like other dogs." And I was too busy just getting him away before that dog got a hold of him. But my response wanted to be, no, he doesn't like aggressive dogs attacking his handler. If it was a service dog, it had no training. If she was disabled and had the right to have a service dog, she wasn't doing it right. The dog was very poorly trained, and whether it was she just wants to play. No, like Nick said, I don't approach another team if I see them in the store, not because I don't trust Skeeter's training, but because I have no idea what training or that dog has or does not have.
Right. Well, at the end of the day, animals are animals. I don't care how domesticated they are. Animals have genetics, just like humans have genetics.
Well, and quite frankly, this is my philosophy. Skeeter is about 105-pound Alaskan Malamute. He's a big, dominant male. And he grew up I was breeding Malamutes. He grew up in a pack. So he is very strong pack mentality, with me being the leader. And Malamutes are very pack-oriented dogs. So anything that threatens his pack, which includes me and my girlfriend, he's going to do I'm the big dog thing, He doesn't growl, he doesn't bark, but he's on alert and he's ready. And, my thought process is nobody's going to defend Skeeter better than Skeeter can defend Skeeter. And I know that I will have to retire him if it ever happens that a dog attacks him and he stops the attack. But I've been bitten. I'm missing the end of one thumb from breaking up a dog fight. I know what damage can be done to any human that gets in the middle. I'm not saying I encourage Skeeter to get into a fight. I absolutely don't. I do everything to avoid any kind of incident. But if a dog did come and attack us, the smartest thing any of us could do is just let go of the leashes, wait for an opportunity to grab their hind legs, back away slowly, and the other person has to be doing it to the other dog, they will drop. They will immediately let go because their hind legs have been lifted off the ground. I know this for a fact because I've done it. I've broken up major fights with kennel dogs and it works. But get your humans in between there. And, you know, as, like I said, nobody will defend Skeeter better than Skeeter. There's probably, I honestly don't know that I've ever run into a dog that if it happened, Skeeter wouldn't be able to take care of himself. I'd have to retire him immediately. Absolutely. But if it's a matter of walking out alive, I'll let Skeeter be Skeeter. It's just, you know, I just, but again, the smartest thing to do, especially in a store where people are bringing in Fifi the Wonder Poodle, is avoid them. It really is. Right. Because although I know what Skeeter's training is, I know Skeeter's perfectly capable of saying, oh, look, there's a dog, and keep it on working. He does it all the time. But I have no idea what that other dog's training is. And that's, you know, that is probably the most dangerous thing for service dog handlers in the United States today. It's not ignorance of the law. It's not, well, it's rooted in ignorance of the law. It's the people who aren't disabled who want to bring their pets in. It's the stores who are scared because they got sued 20 years ago. And so they took their policy the wrong way and permit anybody who claims it's a service dog to bring it in without asking the second question is, you know, what tasks is it trained to perform, which will trip up 99% of the people who don't have any business having a dog in the store. Or stores that aren't afraid to ask because they claimed it was a service dog, but it's misbehaving. They're afraid to ask that it leave. You know, if Skeeter's having a bad day and he's misbehaving, I turn around and leave. That's part of my responsibility as a handler. If he's having a rough time, you know what? We can come back tomorrow. Or we can go outside and get refocused, but I don't push it if he's having a rough day because he's having a rough day. And maybe he's having a rough day because my day's too rough to be there, even with his help. You know, ultimately, it comes down to responsibility. Responsibility on the stores of the businesses, of the chains, of the corporations to educate their people about the law, and responsibility to the handlers to learn as much as they can about the law.
Yeah, exactly. You hit the nail on the head with a lot of great points. Nick, same question to you. Since you do train service dogs and work with veterans to train service dogs, are you actively pursuing any education as it does pertain to service dogs and access in Pennsylvania, as in any access? I mean, you do have the over access, as you mentioned, and if so, how?
Honestly, the education never stops. There's always new techniques, new training methods, new equipment. There's always new taskings. There's always a new case. There's always a new client. Service dogs are individually trained. So what works for one person that has autism doesn't work for the next person. One person has PTSD might need this set of tasks, and the other one might need a whole another one. So we're constantly researching. We're constantly reading up. I spend half my life reading about canine behaviors. I spend over half my life on Google. I swear I must multitask more than 10 people to try and do the best I can for what I know and what I can do. Because like you said, I mean, training for veterans is important. We also do first responders. We also do children with mental disorders or physical disorders. So our scope is quite large. As far as access, I mean, in this area, if you're an honest to God service dog team, you got to constantly be reading the laws. We actually just had a new house bill pass. It's more in the housing environment than it is for access. But it changes so much of the dynamic. It changes the laws. It changes the penalties. It actually starts scrutinizing people that are misrepresenting their animals as a service dog or an ESA to get into housing, to get around pet fees. So it's a great state to make things fair. In public, it's always an education factor. Every person that comes up and makes a kissy, kissy noise, my dog, or anyone comes up and talks to me about what she does, I take that opportunity to educate as much as humanly possible because I know the education in the area is really low. I carry around ADA flyers, state flyers, the ADA cards like Devil Dog does. I hand them out quite freely, you know, because I want the word out there. Because even though I'm competent enough to defend myself, the next team may not be.
Right. Yeah. And I like the fact that you said, you know, you're always learning and there's always something new to learn. Devil Dog, same question to yourself.
Well, after reading Jaquan's book and speaking with him, he's actually inspired me to start a group. So what I'm planning on doing is getting a group of all law enforcement officers in NYPD that have service dogs, and maybe we can share ideas and experiences, and we can actually educate the department on how can you become an effective law enforcement officer with a service dog. People think because you're a cop, you know, what do you mean you have a service dog? You're a cop. You can't be crazy, and that's the persona. You can be an active member of society with PTSD and have a service dog. So I've been inspired to make a group and start a group of us officers and law enforcement, and maybe we can educate the city and educate the department as well.
Nice, nice. I like that. And Jaquan, we feel you, brother.
Jaquan. I thought I wasn't the only one that got that.
That's my Wu-Tang name.
Hey, Devil Dog hasn't slept in 3 days.
Right.
He's too busy chasing weirdos in the East Coast.
Exactly. So, Spaniard, we'll end this question with you. As we've asked all the other participants, are you actively pursuing education regarding service dogs and access in your area? And if so, how?
Well, I kind of feel like the ass here because I don't. I feel in this day and age, I'm a grown ass man. And with the technology that we got today with our smartphones and Google and what have you, if people have the time enough to look up how to make, you know, bean casserole in a thong, then they have the time to understand what PTSD service dogs entail. So I'm very cautious. You know, I understand people for the most part, but I don't totally know them. So I can't really say that I will go out of my way to educate people because I feel it's not my place. I know what I'm capable of. I know what my service dog is capable of. And I've tried, you know, like I said, I've had Katana for 5 years. I've tried to explain it to people. I'm just tired. You know, I just want to go out, do what I got to do. And again, pursuit of happiness. If people don't want to take the time to understand me, after I've taken the time to understand a lot about other things in life, then, you know, who's the real loser here? So I just got to go about my day. And, again, at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's all about happiness. What is it going to take to find my happiness? And if it entails, having Katana at my side in order to find it, then hey, so be it.
Right. We do only have a couple more minutes left of the actual live show. But just so everybody knows, we are going to have an after show that we will let you guys hear. But really quick, a few seconds, starting with Devil Dog, is there anything that you'd like for anybody to be aware of or anything? Last words, really quick.
Just like Nick said, be aware of the laws. They're constantly changing. And that's it. Continue training, having a service dog is a long process. You got to keep training every day and keep abreast of all these laws. That's it.
And Spaniard yourself.
Last thought really is don't give up. I mean, this is still something fairly new. You know, this is something we don't have a lot of, well, actually really no regulation really. And the question needs to come out is who does need to regulate it? Who is going to draw the line between what's a service dog and what's a comfort, you know, what's the over access and what, who determines what really needs access. So, but patience, I think patience is going to be a very, very key thing, as we move forward.
And Joaquin yourself.
I don't really have anything to add, except thank you to everybody who joined the panel. You can check out these two. You can't see that. You can check out the Spaniard and Devil Dog on Black Sheep Bravo on Facebook. Please do so. Nick happens to be one of the admins for PTS Dog, so you can catch up with him there. And other than that, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And education is absolutely key. We know that that's the platform I stand on.
Nick, how about yourself really quick?
Just a little note that when you're training your service dog, it's great using organizations, but understand that you are going to be the one training your dog because you're the one that knows what that dog needs to do. Most organizations understand that, and most state laws understand that a trainer is not defined by an education, but it's defined by being the person that's actively training your dog, whether educated or untrained.
Most definitely. Well, everybody, I, like Joaquin, want to thank each and every one of you for showing up tonight and doing this with us. I can't thank you enough. I hope that you, the listeners, learned something from this. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or anything you'd like to hear in future roundtable discussions, please let us know by emailing us or going to our Facebook page. info@dbradio.net is how you can email us, or you can tweet us @DB_DB Radio. I'm going to end this show. If you guys will all stay on with us, we'll do the after show. But until the next roundtable discussions, thank you all for joining DB Radio on WDBR DBRadio.net.